I do want to thank all of you for your prayers for Barbara and for me during this past week, and for the graciousness with which you took our absence. I want especially to say thank you to Lloyd Atkinson for taking my place this past week. I had someone come up this morning and say such flattering things that I don't think I need to say a whole lot more, but I think those were both accurate and appropriate. I will tell you that it was good to go. It was good to be there. I think there is healing that can come at times when the family gathers for moments like this. And I can also tell you that South Dakota is very cold. When the people who live there say, "Boy, it's really cold today," sort of figure you're seeing that. Now, we have been working on lists for the last little while, and we have one to work on today. And I want to try, if I can, to do something a little different today. And we're going to see if this works. It may not, I don't know. But what I'd like to do is I would like to assign a group of people. I'm looking at the room, and there's looks to my eyes to be something close to 70 people. If I divide 12 into 70, I get approximately 6. And so I'd like to have about 6 people in each group. And what I want you to do is find the book of Nehemiah, because we're going to stay in Nehemiah today. Find the book of Nehemiah, and I want one group to take one of these 12 passages. And I'm going to give you about 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, no more than 10, to read it, talk about it, and see if you can find in there one item for our list this morning. And our list this morning is a list of principles of leadership. If there's a task that needs to be done, what are the principles in God's Word as to how you go about doing something that needs to be done? And so I have found 12 of these. I'm inviting you to help me look and see what you find. But we're going to try this morning this way. All right? So I'm going to start in order on my left side. And the first group will be you guys, just Gary and Carol. So you turn around and talk if you need to talk. If you need to rearrange the chairs a little bit, that's okay. I was asked this morning where the new chairs are, and the answer is I don't know. But I trust that the morning will come that I walk into this room and say yes, as opposed to walking into the room and saying no. Why not? So I invite you to join me in that particular attitude. Let's see. Let's try the next one here to be this group right here. All right, good morning. Peggy, you and Don split this morning. Just for a little while. And then maybe on the back row, back through there, Bob down to Richard, you all take this one. And then you three there, plus maybe the first three over here, you take this one. Let's see, it looks like John, a nice little group right in here, to take this one. And Virginia, you and Sandy sort of go where you feel like going. All right. Back in the corner, Mike, you and maybe two people back to the back. You want to take this one? Okay. And you know, sort of figure out a group to get close to. Now, let's move over here. Elsie and Catherine and Michael, you guys can take this one. And David, you can stay on this side, and you can go across. David, Billy, back in there, you guys can take this one. This group right in here, if you'll take this. Judy, this is your group right around here. Right around you for this one. And then Rita, back to Judy. You guys there, if you'll take this one. And Ron, Janice, Nathan, Carol, and those two back here, you want to take this one.
I didn't know exactly how far. Yeah.
call you back to order. This looked like an interesting experience this morning. This isn't what we always do. Now, let me say a couple of things before we get too far started. One is, what I've just asked you to do is difficult, because it's sometimes easier to see what's going on with, say, number 8 or 9 on a list like this if you've got a sense of the flow of some of the things before. Because what happens is there is a lot of overlap of ideas. Some things emerge a little bit better at certain places, but it's not like Scripture is silent about those at all the other places. And so as we go along, we'll find that some of these down here are clearer if they're informed by this back here. And so you didn't have that advantage this morning. But I think the exercise is still perhaps an interesting one. We'll find out how many complaints I get. Secondly, as we go along, I want you to realize the focus person is Nehemiah. The focus person is Nehemiah. That's the name of the book. There's a reason for that. And what has happened is that the things that happen are happening under Nehemiah's leadership, under God's call and under God's guidance. So, let's see how we did. And I would like to do these in order, so... Group one.
We are assuming that you are talking about a leader that is a Christian leader. Is that what you mean, not just any general leader?
Well, let me say, I have seen this list put together where this is number one and this is ignored. And I have decided that just doesn't make sense in the context. This is very important for you. But in essence, the principles of leadership start here, but something is happening here that without that, the rest of this doesn't really have context. And if you're picking that up and you're doing well, the rest of you have no idea what we're talking about. That's okay. We'll get to this in a minute. What did you learn?
We think that it's a person of presence who can talk to God, has a relationship with God.
Okay.
Okay. I need the person of prayer.
Yeah. You've said it in a little different way than what I wrote down, but I think the idea is still the same. Somebody has to recognize that that's supposed to be an idiot. Someone has to recognize God's call.
Yeah.
Somebody has to recognize God's call.
Yeah, because something bad going on.
And take steps to respond. Now, that's what I wrote. And what you're saying fits in really nicely with that. Now, let me now put this in a little bit of context for you. Nehemiah is in Babylon, in the capital city of Babylon. People have been allowed to return to Israel. The exile is ending, and people have been allowed to return. But things aren't going well. And a report comes back to him that things aren't going well, and he gets spiritually agitated, I think is the right way. Because if you read through those words, what you realize is his spirit is disturbed, and it's disturbed because he has heard this, and what's happening with his relationship with God, there's a tension that comes between those. God is trying to move him. Now, he's got a small problem. He has a significant job. What's his job? He is the cupbearer to the king, which means he takes the food and the wine before the king does. Why does that? If anybody dies, it's Nehemiah first. Now, hang on. You think Nehemiah could slip one by and let the king get poisoned and Nehemiah not? Yeah, I think he could. So the position of cupbearer becomes what? A very, very high trust position with king. Okay? Now, one more moment. Do you remember the story of Esther? One of the great rollicking stories in the Bible. I don't know if you think of the Bible as having great rollicking stories. It has at least two. Jonah and Esther. All right? Mordecai says to Esther, you need to go into the king and talk about this because you've got a position from which you can do this. And she says, you don't just walk into the king. You've got to be invited. And if the king is displeased, we joke about it now in cartoons, off with his head is the thing that comes. And it says in my translation, I was despondent, and the king had never seen me this way before. This is my chapter 2, verse 1. He had never seen me looking depressed before, is the way that verse ends. Why not? Because your job is to keep the king happy and up, and you're to be positive around the king. You're not supposed to be despondent and bring the king down. You do that, the king will replace you with somebody else, and in the process of replacing you, you will have a nice grave to go into because you'll be killed. He revealed to the king that things were not all well, and that happened, I suspect, without him being able to control it. The king spotted it, and instead of being displeased, the king was concerned. What has happened? God is moving to make things happen. If you remember what we said about calls of the call of God at other places, you may remember that one of the things God does is to equip you. And one of the equipping points here is he gave the king a heart that was responsive. So, if you're going to find out what's God's way to get something done, God's way to get something done starts with finding somebody to call out to the work. And having that person have the kind of relationship with prayer as the centerpiece of that to take the steps to respond. Now, you start to get the spirit of how this might go. That's number one. Let's move to number two. Number two. Chapter 2, verse 7 and 8. That would have been back in here with you guys. Okay, up in here. What do you think? Lord, you don't have to speak. You spoke last week. You can make a lot of
sense. We had a discussion about whether the important management process was the planning or the wisdom with which he went to the king and asked for the things that he needed in order to get the job done.
Here's my words. Anticipate need. Anticipate needs. Now, once you've anticipated needs, then some steps might go to see if you could pre-position or do that sort of thing. He realized, you know, I'm going to go. I've got the king's blessings to go. Because if he's not there, somebody else has got to be the cupbearer. And the king has given him permission to go. And he says to the king, thank you for permission to go. Now, I'd like to take with me, and he lays out a laundry list of equipment and supplies that would stagger the mind. And the king grants those as well. But the key point in here is that somebody who is in a leadership position has anticipated some needs. He's asking for things in that. And he's asking for things before he's ever stepped, first step on the road from Babylon to Israel.
Bill, to tie one and two together, my Bible in one of the notes says that to pray, we should pray by placing the anticipated outcome in God's hands. And I think that goes with what you're saying here. Anticipate the needs.
Yeah.
Know that there's a higher person.
Now, it may be time here to say, what was the thing that needed to be done?
Rebuild
the walls. You don't have security in a city if the walls have not been built. And the word that came to him was, the city is sitting there completely undefended. It has no walls. How long has that been in place? Starts with Q. Quite a while.
Start with I.
No. Best estimates that I've seen are something on the order of 40 years. They started, you have to go back into the book of Ezra, they started and they quit. And they've been sitting like that for 40 years. The work had been begun, and then the work was stopped, and the work didn't go anywhere. Why didn't it go anywhere? Because there was no leadership. Nobody was there. So, he has anticipated, what do you need to build a wall?
Material.
You might need materials of one kind. The workforce is probably out there, but the materials, they might need some things that you can't get there. Now, he knows about Israel. Whether he lived there or not is another question. It's been about 70 years, I think. So it's not likely he would remember much about that as the vigor that he seems to have. But he would at least know something of the stories that people told him. So they would know what was there, and he would know what he needed to bring. Okay?
He'd need real people, too, wouldn't he? People who really tell stories.
Yeah, you better know where your skill set is. Right.
We're looking for safety.
Uh-huh. That's right. He carries key soldiers with him. Right. So there's a little, but anticipating needs to me sort of summarizes that one pretty well. I will comment, I'm stealing shamelessly from Jim Pardue, who, those of you who know Jim Pardue, might say a word of prayer for him. He is preaching his first substitute sermon in Tennessee. He's retired to Tennessee, and this is the first church that's invited him to fill a pulpit, and he's doing that this morning in a little place called Etowah. If you know enough about Tennessee, you know where Etowah is. He's preaching in that church this morning. Okay, group three was where? Back there? Okay, group three. You guys had just two verses. You didn't have the following. This means and the following. Sort of go aways, and who knows how long. And I said how far I have to go the other time. But this was very specific. Okay, what did you pick up in there?
It was a script that we had to anticipate the needs. Nehemiah had to organize a few good men to accomplish his task.
Okay.
And discreetly do it.
It's the word discreetly that caught my eye. I used the word quietly out of the public eye.
Right.
But it wasn't so much laying specific things as much as it was figuring out the details of the problem. In other words, he knew we need walls built. I can sort of anticipate what's out there, and I know then sort of generally what I need to bring with me. But when he gets there, when he arrives in Israel, then he's got a chance to look at the problem face on. And what's interesting to me is he doesn't take all the other people around who have been in leadership positions before. I think he did this at night, didn't he?
He did it at night with a few.
Verse 11, verse 12, after I've been there 3 days, verse 12, I got up during the night with a few, just a small number of people. And he went out, and I think you have to read maybe verse 13 and 14. I should have had a following on yours. But he goes and he looks and sees the details. Now you have a sense of, okay, I've got to rebuild the wall. What do I have to do here? And what has to be done there? Right? So the idea is quietly out of the public eye, determine what the specific problems are, or what the specific problem is if it happens to be a single piece. You got a wall all the way around the city with all kinds of issues. He's got lots of problems to face. But quietly out of the public eye. Okay. Now, this big long one here. I need to write this. I'm sorry. Quietly out of public eye. Determine. Maybe that's enough bumps. Specific problems. You understand what I'm saying by that, right? Okay, now, the next group was over in here, I think. Okay, now I gave you some out of chapter 2, some out of chapter 4. What was the sort of spirit of what was happening in there?
Well, there was opposition.
Yeah.
The building of the wall.
There was opposition. What did Nehemiah do about that?
He stepped up and said they're going to do it in spite of the opposition.
Okay, and how did he do that?
Prayer.
Okay, anything else?
Dividing the...
Yeah, right.
Problem between...
God organizes.
Let's just leave that off entirely. Organize to neutralize.
Isn't that a great little alliteration? Did you catch it?
Okay.
Organize to neutralize. Or loving.
And that just happened. That's not the words I have up here, but organize to neutralize opposition. Right? Organize to neutralize opposition.
Listen, if you don't do that as a leader, you're going to have some severe problems. There will be people who will oppose whatever you do. I just quit speaking to you, and I started speaking to me. I just took on a leadership role. We're going to see how it goes. But if I'm a leader and I'm not thinking about this pretty early, I'm probably going to be in for some trouble. I'm thinking about this early. So was he. All right. Now,
This next one, which takes you back to chapter 3, it's almost the whole of chapter 3, I think, right? You had a, that was back in here, right? But if you look at it, what was happening here has a real parallel to what was happening here, I thought. I don't know if you saw that as well. This is one of those that in the context is maybe a little easier for you to see now. Who wants to talk? John?
A couple of things came out of our discussion of this. The whole thing through the whole chapter was a distribution list of people that were to do various tasks.
Yeah, so you organize to neutralize the opposition. I don't have a good alliteration for this, but you organize the people. Now, these are the people, the group, members, whatever word you want to use for what is being provided leadership by Nehemiah, or in other cases, to do the tasks.
There was a second point that we didn't have time to really pursue that came out of verse 5. Their nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord, and one of the translations had supervisors. That brings an interesting point, at least for me, who used to teach management classes, is what role should supervisors have in task accomplishment? Should they pitch in and do that, or should they remain in the supervisory role?
Who's got group 9? Pay good attention to what he just said. This is one of those that laps over with you. Because what I've done in this organization is I've left that piece for here because it comes out even bigger. The writer, the historian has told you that in the middle of all this, there is a problem that's growing. But Nehemiah has not done anything about it in your chapter. It's just there. He does something about it over a little bit later. He does something about it there, and he does something about it. Who's got group 7? This is the following. There's a piece of what John just talked about that connects to yours as well. You'll see how Nehemiah works on that. So the problem has shown up in yours, and you're very right to observe it. But it hasn't been solved or addressed by Nehemiah yet. It's addressed a little later.
The point, the illustration I used to work with in teaching was you have a flood and people need to load bags of sand to keep the flood, and the supervisor pitches in to help, and they run out of sand, and then there's no sand to keep it. See, that's the issue that's involved when supervisors get too involved in detail and let some of their supervisor responsibilities go.
This particular one is a little different from that particular scenario. These are just people that don't want to help. So they aren't the supervisors. They're not much of anything. Now, there is something in there, though. This is the one that I have. I think there's two of these that I have an A and a B on. There's two of these, and yours is one of those. So the A is organize the people to do the tasks, but there is a B on that. And the B on that I found in verses 22, 23, 28, 29, and 30. If you're following along, you can go look there. Chapter 3, verse 22, 23. Let me just read this a little bit. Okay? I'm going to start at verse 20. He's got this long list of the people who are doing the work, identifying the people who are doing the work. After him, Baruch the son of Zabbai. Let me remind you that if you pronounce it as if you know what you're doing, everybody will believe that you really do. Repaired another section from the angle, that's capitalized in mine, so that must be a feature of the wall, to the door of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. After him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of so-and-so, repaired another section from the door of Eliashib's house as far as the end of Eliashib's house. And after him, repairs were carried out by the priests who lived in the district. Verse 23. After them, repairs were carried out by Benjamin and Hashub opposite their own house. After them, repairs were carried out by Azariah, son of a certain person, son of another person, beside his own house. Did you pick up what happened in there? Did you see that little bit? He's walking along saying, these people are working here, these people are working here, these people are working here. And all of a sudden he gets to the point where these people are working here, and that's where they live. And this guy is working here, and that's right by his house. And this one's working here, and it's right by his house. How did he organize this?
By demographic.
Well, yeah, almost. The people who had the most to gain were put to work at the place where their work would be something. If they don't work well, they pay the first price for it because the wall isn't right by their house. What if you'd taken that person and had them working on the other side of Jerusalem? Probably, you know, it wouldn't have taken as much interest. So it's almost two things. One is it's organizing the people, and one of the principles that of the organizing seems to be to let self-interest play a role.
Bill, yeah. I would rephrase it and say it's people who have the most to lose. The fear of loss supersedes fear of gain most of the time.
Boy, there's a lot of places to go with that one. Why has our church set aside a committee system where we try to fill the committees with somebody who will serve on the committee? Why have we gone to trying to match up people with passions and interests and gifts? Why did we do that? Because they're working on things they care about. It's not a perfect one-to-one parallel, but it's pretty close. If you're working on something you care about, the chances are you're going to put more effort into it. If you're working on something, it doesn't matter. And whether you call it the most to gain or the most to lose, and I agree with you, if people recognize, you know, I've got a lot to lose if I don't do this right, that might be a better motivating force. But the idea is to let people work in their own interest, to where you connect that. In a way, what we've done in our church, I think, parallels that. Okay?
Bill, it seems to me there's a third one here.
Go for it.
Right in the first two verses. Because it says, the high priest and the other priests rebuilt the wall, then skip to verse 2. Men from the city of Jericho worked next to them. I would say that's leadership by example.
Yeah, and if you notice, back where I was reading, the verses right before the verses where people were working in their own interest was right around the house where the high priest lived. Why wasn't the high priest working there? It's because he's working on one of the big things. He's working on the gates. And so, yeah, you've got one of the big dogs working in a very visible place. And then you've got the people who have come from some distance away and don't necessarily have an investment in Jerusalem at all. You've got them working where they can see one of the leaders work. And again, that ties into John's principle a little while ago. If you've got leaders who aren't putting forward an effort, you're going to have some problems. Okay? Now, 6 is extremely appropriate. It's extremely appropriate. Who has 6? Excellent.
chapter 4 is about the opposition to the rebuilding, and by this time there's a lot of complaining and moaning about the materials and the quality of the work and the workforce and the timing of the jobs. Everybody's moaning and complaining about the wall. And
buried in the middle of that is this little verse.
And then Nehemiah stopped and prayed about the complainers, and then they went right back to work and sort of rebuilt half the wall, and despite all of the opposition. And we felt that showed resilience and leadership and perseverance despite criticism. And then we get to verse 9, and it says, we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. So they asked for God's help, God's intervention, but they posted a guard. They paid attention. Yep. They were watchful.
And that's back here. In other words, I think that's sort of an echo of going on through that. There's something really special in verse 6. I'm hoping I got it right. This is one of those places where my numbers and your numbers don't necessarily match up. Can you read just verse 6?
Yeah, it says that they rebuilt the wall till all that reached past the site where the people worked with all their heart.
Yeah. Now, I want to put it together for you. I don't know that I'm right. I might be wrong, but I think I'm right. What made him mention that the wall had reached half height?
Well, I think you have to celebrate. You're a leader, you have to celebrate victories along the way. You don't wait till the end.
How many we have to go? How many
are we doing? Sort of like Dr. Cooper, the way he celebrated the staff, the number of progress and things.
Between the two classes, Barbara and I received a couple of very nice Christmas gifts. And I think it was the second hour gave, and in this case gave me and not us, a gift certificate to Barnes & Noble. And what I did was bought one of the big, huge... Anyway, I bought a compilation of cartoons. I now have all of the cartoons in the New Yorker up until about 1999 or 2000. I have all of the Calvin and Hobbes and all of the Farsight. It's a feast. Okay. I was looking at the New Yorker cartoons, and there's a New Yorker cartoon from about 1934 that shows some people working on a building, and I'll just outline it for a second. Here's the corner of the building, here's the corner of the building, and there's bricks being laid. And there's a bricklayer working up here, and there's a bricklayer working down here, and there's a bricklayer working about here. And the supervisor is saying, George, I think you're falling behind in your work.
Now, why is that funny?
You don't get good strength if you let one group go running ahead while other groups... They all reached half height. They're all working together, and I think they stopped and celebrated intermediate victories, intermediate accomplishments. And that's what I'm going to write down here is celebrate intermediate accomplishments.
That encourages you to go on.
Yeah. And did you notice the result? The people put their hearts into the work. You start to say, oh my goodness, we are getting something done. Look at what we've gotten done so far. Right? Now, we have to speed up because we've got 4 minutes left for six more things. So let's see if we can move here quickly. Group seven.
Group seven, is that you all?
Concise and quick.
Here we discuss instructions for the guys that we want them to be vigilant, be alert, be on guard. And if they ride their assigned area to get water, they're going to take their weapons with them, keep their weapons with them at all times.
Did you notice verse 23? Verse 23 says something really personal about Nehemiah. Did you see it? I hope it's verse 23. It's verse 17 in my chapter. Is there a verse 23 in your chapter 4? Is it the last verse? Is the first verse in chapter 5, there was a great outcry from the people and from their wives against the brother Jews? Good. So, in your group, read me your last verse.
Somebody in your group, read just...
Neither I, nor my brothers, nor any men, nor the guards with me, took off our clothes. Each had his weapon... even when he went to war.
Neither I nor my brothers nor my guards. Nehemiah has not put himself in a position of leading from a distance. He has put himself into the task. Now that one becomes very personal for the leader, and I think addresses your issue.
The first thing he does to address the problem back in your part is to set an example of his own dedication. And everything else, Tom, is the context in which that all fits. Everybody else is having to do this, and I did too. This is a leader who's in the trenches with the people doing the work.
So I put down the leader sets an example himself. The leader himself sets an example.
Yes, there's much more in that section. And you've done a good job of bringing some of those things out. Number 8. This is the...
That's right.
concise.
I think what we assessed here is that the leader decided that he heard the concerns of the people. He was listening to how they had been abused, how the poor were not being taken care of, and he said, "I'll call a meeting after listening," and he said to the nobles and the priests and those, he said, "We're going to return. You're going to return everything to them. The sorcery is going to be removed, and that you must promise to do this." I think the promise piece was what I think we saw. As a caring person, I mean, you can make people make commitments, but they've got a promise that they're going to follow through on it. And the promise was that they were going to care for them and not abuse them any longer. I think one of the persons in our little group said that, you know, this is sort of what deacons do. They saw this as a deacon activity about listening and then responding. And, you know, throughout the Bible, we talk about the poor, those people that don't have anything, and that we need to respond to that. And I think that's what Nehemiah was listening
to. Yeah, and I'm going to add your word up there. Listen and then oppose and confront. There were some who wanted to make a profit. There were some who wanted to take advantage of the sacrifice of other people. And the leader opposed and confronted the people who were doing that. And that's going to happen. People who aren't part of the solution, and they're actually adding to the problem. Number nine.
Oh, Nehemiah was willing to work at his job and not accept any pay. He worked for the benefit of all. He also was willing to work along with everyone, about 700 people, and do that.
I wrote the leader leads in sacrifice as well as in effort. He says, look, what happened was the king appointed him as the big cheese in charge. Now the big cheese in charge gets the pick of food, gets the pick of other things, and has servants to serve his every need. And he said, I refused that. I did not take the portion that would have been mine. So he's opposing people back here who had taken advantage of that. He joins the ones who are sacrificing. He's leading by effort as well as by sacrifice. And John, I think it's that combination of those right in there that I think goes back to talk to that problem that first emerged visibly back in that early section.
I think there's a difference between sharing in terms of certain situations and being so involved in the details that you lose out.
Yeah. Nehemiah doesn't seem to have that problem.
Yeah, these are complementary facets of leadership.
Right.
Not opposed.
Yeah, and I think the next one may apply to that even more. Who had number six? Number ten, I mean.
Okay. By this time, his enemies were trying to create fear in Nehemiah and his and people working on the wall. And he showed absolute courage to lead them through.
I wrote down, don't be distracted from the main goal. Don't be distracted from the main goal. There's a sense in which all the little problems can start to come out, and that can be huge. Now, I've got a little something written over here to the side. Chapter 6, verse 15 and 16. How long did it take to rebuild the walls? 52 days. How long had they been sitting there unrebuilt?
40
years. Let's review that. How long had they been sitting there unrebuilt? How long did it take to rebuild the walls? 52 days. Unbelievable. Except a godly leader, leading with godly principles, a people who's willing to be led, willing to work. It's amazing what can take place and what can happen. Now, there's two things left. They are not little, but I hope that they will be quick. Chapter 11. Number 11, chapter 7.
He chose good people to help him out and gave him instructions and let him carry
out. Not exactly helped him out.
To carry out the stuff he should have been delegating.
When the original leader is gone, have you prepared new leadership to continue the effort? I got called into the provost's office about a year ago. I've been in charge of a program at the university for 15 years. And she looked at me with, looked like she was prepared to scold criticize. She said, what have you done to prepare somebody else to take your position if you're not here? Well, luckily I had an answer. There was a person that I had been preparing and grooming, and it turns out that person is now in charge of things. Almost every year they put him in charge of that, put me in charge of something else. But this turns out to be a big one. There are many leaders who lead wonderfully and never turn the leadership over to anybody else, never train anybody else. I can remember years ago having a department chair who said, I'm going to be retiring in 3 years. And I said, good. In 1 year, with 2 years left, you should give up being department chair. Somebody else should take that, so that you're here for that person to ask you questions rather than off at the lake house or off on the boat or off with your feet up on the porch. And he took my advice, and we made a much better transition than we would have otherwise.
Well, John,
without going too far down that road, Richmond is in big trouble if he doesn't figure this out. This is a big one. I don't think it'll take very long to say, but it's a big one. All right? What's number 12?
Look it all over and celebrate.
When you've got it all done, find a way to celebrate. And we're going to talk about that celebration next week, because that turns out to be a very interesting focal point for a very different way of looking at what's going on through here. So, we're almost done. Yes, sir.
This problem, I should have commented on this earlier, but one of the slick jobs I had here was studying the building, the Empire State Building. It took something like 1 to 2 years to build it. They had no red tape, all motivated because of the depression. And the project was that going to fail over the years, trying to get going, just getting rebuilding the building.
I think if these principles had been followed, we'd be a little bit better off. Involve everybody in the celebration. There's beautiful pictures of what goes on. This is enough for today. Thank you for your patience. I hope this is a list that will be useful to you as you think about things that you're involved in. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, from time to time there are things that need to be done. You call someone out not to do it as much as to lead in getting it done. Help us when it's our turn to be a leader, that we can be a leader who follows your principles. And help us when there's a task to be done and we're to be supporters, that we can be supporters who join in the sacrifice, join in the effort, and therefore when it's over, we will all have something to celebrate. We pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.